your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, balancing form and essence with Reiki master and host Phyllis Lei Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence. Today I have the pleasure of being with Maggie Hall. She's from a little city south of Perth, Western Australia, and we're here today to have a conversation about how she came to Reiki and, well, we'll just see where the conversation leads. Welcome, Maggie, to the show.
Hello, everybody.
Great. So one of the first things I like doing, Maggie, is to ask you to tell your Reiki story. Like, how did you come into contact with Reiki?
It was really quite interesting. I had a background as a bit of a high-powered retailer in children's toys, and it was back in 1992, and I had all the trappings of workaholism, and what happened was eventually my physical body froze up and my neck was very stiff and wouldn't move, and I had bumped into a friend that I'd done some work with, and she suggested that I go and see a woman for a massage. And of course that was completely off my map. I didn't have time for massages. I'd never had a massage. I was 30-something years of age and was doing the normal trip of raising children, being in business, and obviously hadn't built that side up in my life. So I said, yeah, fine, I'll take the number, which I did do, and I was my business was in Perth, and the store that I had was a good 40-minute drive from where I lived in the south of Perth, and I'd knocked off work and I was coming down this very lonely highway thinking of the millions of things that I needed to do when I got home: cook dinner, feed the dog, etc., etc., do the books. And of course the neck was really pinging and I was really stiff and pretty angry, I think. Not a terribly approachable person. I don't really think I liked myself much then. And I was driving along and I saw this woman walking along the highway, and she had grey hair and was tall and thin, and I saw a vehicle was parked further down the road, and I thought, I drove past her thinking I don't have time to stop, and then I thought, oh, she's somebody's grandmother. So I did a U-turn back up the highway, stopped for this woman, and it indeed was her vehicle that had run out of petrol. So she jumped in the car, I took her down to get some fuel, which was about 5-7 k's down the road, turned around, filled the van up for her, and off she went. So that was fine. I went off with my stiff neck and returned home to the kids chomping at the doorway, did all the millions of things that I was structured to do at that time, and I thought, gee, this neck is giving me a really hard time. I've got to do something. So I picked the phone number up the next day and dialed the number, booked in for a massage. Lord knows how I was going to fit that into my schedule, but I had made a commitment to do that. So I turn up at this place, which is actually only 3 k's from where I live, and I knock on the door, and I've got sunglasses on and I'm huffing and puffing and I've only got X amount of minutes to squeeze this in, and this woman answered the door, and I looked at her and she looked at me, and I lifted my sunglasses off my eyes, and lo and behold, it was a woman that had run out of petrol. And I mean,
well, that's unbelievable.
that's what I thought. She was a little alternative, and I was very straight. So it was quite a shock to think that I had landed in this place, and what for? And I said, "Do you know me?" And she said, yes, she said, you were the person that picked me up a couple of days ago when I'd run out of petrol. So there you go. That's a little bit of what happened, and so we go into this massage room, and you know, I have to be all vulnerable and strip off and have this massage, and I looked at a little coffee table that was in the room, and it had her spiritual guru sitting on there, and he looked like a bit of a wild dude, and I thought, oh, this is really off the planet. And she had incense burning, and I thought, okay, so I'm laying on this table, and she said, I do massage, and I also incorporate in it a technique called Reiki, which will, you know, help you relax. And I thought, Reiki, and the only sort of Reiki I know is in the garden. And so I thought, okay, fine. So this woman places her hands over my face, which I thought was really unusual. I was there for a massage. There was nothing wrong with my face. My neck hurt. And I had this vision. It was so clear. It was like somebody had turned a TV on. It was almost like this person had, I know the terminology now, I didn't know then, as if she'd shape-shifted into a very old, plaited Indian woman. And I thought, must be something in that incense. So I had this massage and this Reiki stuff, and I think I dribbled all over the table. I was that relaxed. And I thanked her and exchanged payment and agreed to come back twice a week for a fortnight to try and get my body a little bit more flexible. Little did I know, it wasn't my body that needed to be so much more flexible as my heart and my spirit. So I duly make, because I'm a person, if I make a commitment, I stick to it. No matter how much it would put me under the pump, I would be there at the designated time. So this went on, and I found myself, after about the third massage, questioning her about Reiki and what it was and what it meant. And as I thawed out and my neck thawed out, other things started to come up for me, which were physical complaints that I'd had medical tests for, and there was a lot of ideas being thrown around, all of which none appealed to me and were quite invasive medically. So I said to her, look, there's got to be another way that we can do this. I'm pretty scared. I'm young. I've got a young family, and I don't want to be sick, and I don't want to be crippled or ill. So she said, okay, let's have a Reiki session. The massages had loosened the body up, obviously loosened the mind up, opened the heart, and I said, okay, so for 2 weeks every day, this wonderful woman gave me Reiki. And through those treatments, I was transported to places that I didn't know that I could feel, or I didn't know where the memories or the emotion was coming from. But even though it wasn't exactly comfortable, I knew it was right. And of course I was so used to intellectualising things and being able to slot them in little pigeonholes, and everything, the structure of my life was virtually crumbling, and I don't think I'd cried probably for 15 years, and all these feelings were coming up, and I thought, what am I going to do with them? And I thought what this woman was doing was just marvellous. And I questioned, can anybody do this? And of course she was a Reiki master. And she said, yeah. She said, I teach people, and it's I run weekends where we do first degree classes, and it's cost is X amount and rah-de-rah. So I thought, oh, well, be in for a pound or a penny. So I jumped in. I said, look, can I book into the next course? Because I thought, and she explained that you could give Reiki to yourself. And to me, I thought that was really good, because I could actually take some control at least of when and how I received the Reiki. And I took my first degree, and it was amazing. It was like lifting the lid off a rubbish bin, and inside, instead of being rubbish, was this joy and laughter and lightness that I could almost see as that I had as a young child. And it was pretty appealing. Wow. And so I got on better with the kids. I stopped yelling at the dog. I started thinking that I was all right. And, of course, it meant that I could give myself Reiki every day. And in that, my body was balancing on many levels. I was open to more ideas, concepts, feelings. I found passion for life again instead of just trudging through it.
Well, that's an amazing story because, of course, I knew you after. So I didn't know the before Maggie. Actually, at that point, it was Margaret, huh?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Which is a little harsh.
So, and I've always known you with a great sense of humor and lots of joy and sparkle coming out of your eyes. So it's interesting to hear the story.
Mm. Yeah, so, it did. It changed my life.
Oh, that's amazing. And so then eventually you became a master?
Yes, I did.
Yeah?
Yes.
And how long did it take you between the time that you...
Well, I took my first degree in 1992.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so good with dates. And I was initiated on the 12th of May. It was the very, very, very beginning of 1992. So it was about a three-year period.
Uh-huh.
But in that time, it was like the metal to the pedal. I was on full accelerate. And just like this sea sponge taking in anything that I could learn, and it was great, and the joy of the people that I met. I thought, this is so good because everybody can do this. And I've always been a great believer in kitchen table wisdom. Of being able to have something in the home that everybody can benefit from, and the joy just overflows. So yes, I was initiated by you in 1994 in May.
Well, just for the listeners, I just want you to know that I didn't forget that I initiated her. But sometimes on the radio show, it's quite interesting to balance this foreknowledge and having people that I have known for a very long time on the show, and also not wanting to have it become a personal conversation, but a conversation on the radio. So this is me juggling my little roles, so shall we say. Well, I have lots of questions for you, and we're right at the time of taking a station break, so I think we'll pause here and we'll come back in a minute. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore? Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have with me Maggie Hall. We're sitting on her lanai, or little covered outdoor what do you call them? Porch or something? What do you call them in Australia?
Decking.
Decking. And you might have noticed that she uses a different kind of English, which, of course, is Australian English. And I'm using American English, and some of you might be used to hearing the Queen's English. So we'll hopefully be able to, if the terminology gets too out there, then we'll back up and do some definition stuff. You might be hearing the Australian bird life because we're sitting outside, and it's a part of the scene here. So I'm glad that we are sitting here and you can listen to some of the wonderful birds. So I'm, as you probably figured out, I'm in Australia right now, and having a great time here. It's colder than I thought it would be. And I just wanted to come back, Maggie, to something that you said in your story about, let's see, I'm just wondering, did this woman who first gave you Reiki, she must have been one of the first Reiki masters in this area, or? Because that was pretty early on for Reiki in Australia.
Mm. She'd followed her spiritual path through India, and she was a very educated, talented woman in academically as well as she just had this spiritual essence and being that was, you looked at her and it was like light.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
Yeah, she was had travelled overseas for a long time, and then come back to Australia with her partner, bringing the gift of Reiki to share with
uh-huh.
our community,
uh-huh.
which
was
around
her name?
Fremantle. Utica.
Mm. Oh, right. Mm. Uh huh. Oh, interesting. Uh huh. And so then you took second degree, and then it eventually became a master after 3 years. And what was your motivation or passion or something that made you choose to take the next step of mastery?
It's multifaceted that I could answer that, but majorly it was because everybody could use this gift,
uh-huh.
access it.
Uh-huh.
It was not elitist.
Uh-huh.
And that was a lovely thing, that the introduction that I'd had to Reiki, it wasn't elitist. There was a big push and boom on personal development, cathartic sessions going off right, left and centre, but in Fremantle and Perth where I was living, and this was a gentle modality. It was not always comfortable, but from the personal healing aspect, but it was the, as I said, just the non-elitist access to it.
Uh-huh.
It was affordable, and I had been around long enough to realise that magic happens, and it's a really sort of, you know, corny phrase. However, I had witnessed it myself,
uh-huh.
and I had seen it in many people. So therefore, if I needed any proof, it was there. And my passion was to help make or help provide Reiki for everybody if they chose to do it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I just thought it was the right thing to do. It was my path.
Uh-huh. And so then after you were initiated as a master, we had our class in Victoria. Then you came back to the west coast of Australia.
That's correct.
To Perth, and then you started teaching?
Yes, I started teaching. I was still selling kids' toys. I was still had a very extremely overfull life.
Right. She had three very energetic young sons.
Yep. And at the time, my partner John had also taken first degree Reiki a couple of years prior. And so we were doing this dance of change within our relationship, change with how we raised our children, because we were both receiving insights into possible ways of, there's no right and wrong, but doing it better with our kids, and doing it better with our friendship and our relationship.
Great. And so do you have a story or two you can tell about your first years of teaching? I just have, as a little hint, I remember you telling me the story about wheat farmers. Where were they?
Oh, they were a marvellous mob of people. They're about 200 k's southeast of Perth in the Wheat Belt region, called Wickapin.
Wow, what a name. Yeah, is Wickapin. That an Aboriginal word?
Oh, most of them are. That's Wickapin, Narrogin, which is another little town near there. And they were third generation broadacre farmers. And I put an article in some of the local papers in the country areas, because part of my passion has always been connected to the country. Even though I lived in the city, I grew up on the river, and my playground was the foreshore, so I had a real thing about being in the dirt. And I wrote an article just stating what Reiki was and who I was, and I was prepared to travel if people wanted to explore, and if they wanted to invite me to give a talk at their local town halls, which have been probably there for 100 years, they could ring me. A bunch of these people in this small farming community got together. One was already organically growing grain, and he had been a third generation broadacre farmer whose father had used tons and tons and tons of chemicals, because that's what you did.
Yeah,
you knocked
exactly.
the trees down, you put the crop in, you fed the family. It's basic survival out there. And he had started to change his way of thinking and wanting to walk on the earth more gently and provide a product that was cleaner and safer. So he got a couple of his mates from neighbouring farms and their wives, and they came along, and I gave a talk on the Thursday night, and it was beautiful. It was in a little, what we call CWA hall, and that was the Country Women's Association hall, where the wives of the cockies, or we call them cockies, but they're farmers, would go in, you know, once every 3 or 4 weeks and have their meeting about what the women would do in the country community.
So that's an interesting way to put it.
Well, they didn't have much socialisation. Like, we're talking about hundreds of k's between farms. Yeah. And they may not see another woman for a month or two or six, or depending on the distance and what the commitment to the land was. So I gave this talk, and I'm looking up on the wall, recognising the people's surnames that have come to the talk, because I've gotten to write down their names. And there was, you know, Bertha Jeffries, 1902, and I'm sort of aging the people up that are there. So they must have had their great-grandmother's names on this wall, in this little hall. So I explained what it was. I made it as simple as possible, because I don't believe Reiki is that complicated. It's only when we get in with our intellectual sophistication that we try to add more. And these people were just great. I got maybe 3 or 4 questions. How long does it take?
Very practical.
When can I use it? And how many people do you need, love? So it was incredible, absolutely incredible. And I said, well, how many is there? 2 would be great. So you've each got a body to work on. And they had a chat, and they said, we're all in. So there was 12 people for this class, and which started on the Saturday morning. And they'd made their commitment. They'd fed their sheep early, and they'd done whatever they needed to do, and they had to drive into town from Wickapin, which was probably about 60 k's. And they fronted up every morning at 9 o'clock, and they just did it.
Wow.
And these people were very busy and all the time had a project or task orientated, because that's how their lives ran and what they needed to do for the land, for produce. And we'd have big fellas there that were 6'4", going to sleep on the massage tables. And they were huge men, so I'm trying to teach hand positions at the back, which had to be improvised with a couple more. And these big fellas, you know, come out and have a barbecue on the Saturday night. So we had a couple of beers and a steak and some salad, and I played with the kids and the dogs, and they were just so in the earth, so with it, so accepting. And they went away with it and they use it on their farms.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, and they didn't try to complicate it. I just told them it's like twiddling a radio. You're not quite on the station. I'm just going to twiddle your knobs and get you there so you get the message loud and clear. And they I'd say at the end of each, you know, section that we had, are there any questions? And as a master, as a teacher, I get a little bit worried that if I say, are there any questions, and they all sit there blank-faced, I have two ways to look at that. Either they've really got it, or they think I'm a sham and they don't want to ask any questions. But no, they taught me very, very much the fact that it was simple, they did get it, and they took it away and they used it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, really lovely.
Well, you know, I've taught in the Midwest in the United States, and that's all farming. There it's corn, not wheat.
Yep.
And then they feed the corn to the pigs.
Yep.
Or the cows or whatever. But, you know, I grew up in a farming community myself, and I realized that, you know, life is simple, and yet they have a handle or a connection to the natural order of how things work that is so profound that, you know, to take Reiki into that feels just like a natural step for them. Mm. And I really appreciated my classes there also. I think that's beautiful. And I love the images that you evoke in your descriptions. Great. So what year was that?
That would have been 1995.
95. So they've had Reiki now for 13 years.
They have, yes.
Wow.
And particularly two of them are still organically farming and sell their wheat to an organic mill.
Wonderful.
And one of them has moved off the land.
Interesting.
Because he had, an epiphany.
Uh-huh.
That there was other work that he needed to do.
Wow.
For his family. He had a young family, and it's pretty tough. We've had some pretty bad drought stuff out here, and I think his soul was tired, and he wanted to let that go so he could move on, because he could see that it was not going to be the natural order that his children would be able to take the farm over. So I think, you know, he probably got out at a good time for him and his family.
Uh-huh.
And moved to the city and took on different stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good.
But he had the courage to do it.
Great.
And I think that is... He had a very big connection to his family and his kids and his wife. And again, I really acknowledge the uncomplicatedness of that.
Uh-huh.
This is how it is. I can't do anymore.
Uh-huh.
Now I will start dreaming about what I can do.
Yeah.
And he had the faith to do that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, this is a good place to stop for another station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back in a minute.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Maggie Hall. We're in Bunbury, Western Australia. We're sitting outside, feeling the rays of the sun and listening to the birds chirping in the background. I don't know if you can hear them, but the Australian birds are very famous. And we're just having a great talk about mastery and some of Margaret's wonderful experiences with the real folks, if I may say this, and her passion for kitchen wisdom, which I liked very much. So you were laughing and having another memory?
Yeah, I have travelled quite a bit in the country to teach, and Western Australia is a very big state in Western Australia, and I have a passionate connection with a place called Broome, which is about 2,600 kilometres from Perth.
Wow.
It's about a 22-hour drive.
That's north?
North, yeah.
Yeah, it's get out your atlases all and check out Western Australia.
It's absolutely a wild piece of country. The earth is a Pindan red, so it's a deep clay red colour. And it's as fine as talcum powder.
Wow.
It is just a beautiful place. And the ocean, it's right on the ocean, is the brightest turquoise blue I've ever seen on the planet. And they have tides of 9 to 10 metres in one day.
Wow.
So the whole place of energy of this place is moving quickly within that 24 hours. But it's also, it's a pearling was the biggest trade there. And a lot of Japanese tourists and pearlers would come out, settled with their families. I'm talking about the 1800s, late 1800s. And they were, and still are today, a very, very large part of the community, along with the Aboriginal people from the Kimberley. The Japanese influence. And because the climate is just absolutely stunning from around about April through till about November, and then you've got to get out because it gets too hot. If you're not a local, you just stay up there and they call you, go tropo with the tropical heat and storms and what have you. But I've taught many classes up there, and it was, you asked about mastery. I think it's more about self-mastery, teaching up there, because everything is on broom time.
Uh-huh.
You have a class that starts at 9 o'clock. They're still drifting in at 10:30.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a person that likes to get up people's frocks or get cross at them because they're late, because there'll be a reason. And somebody took me aside and said, look, this is just broom time. It's how it happens. And I had a class of, one very large class of 20. And I hired a place that backed onto this beautiful beach called Cable Beach, which you can drive your car along, and the tides are coming in and out, and it's just magnificent. And 20 people, and there was two toilets. And I don't think I've ever burnt so much incense in a class. Because the morning, the first morning of the class, the toilet system backed up.
Oh, no.
So I don't know whether anybody knows about, well, we have in Australia septic systems, which are virtually cement liners that go into the earth. And so it's not sewage. It doesn't go anywhere except in this big hole.
Right.
And, of course, they were chockers. They were full. And this is the morning of the class. And people are coming in late, and I'm really wanting to scream about this because I wanted it to be all spiritual and sweet, and all we could smell was full septic tanks. And different sorts of people. I had Germans from that class because it's a very touristy destination and people pick up a lot of seasonal work. So we had about five different nationalities in this class.
Wow.
And I'm standing there trying to sort of be probably holier than thou. I was a bit full of myself on the day. It soon got knocked out of me as the Reiki master, because there I was standing outside the window after the first initiation in the morning, talking with this man in a big truck that had come to pump out these tanks. And they were all lined up listening to our conversation. And this man knew so much about sewerage, I had a crash course in it. And so virtually he was really into his job. So there I was, I'd set this wonderful scene, and it all fell apart from the tranquil, nice music, etc., etc., to me standing there taking the top off the septic tank, saying, well, just empty it, mate. I don't care what you do to get rid of it. So the day went on, and the people were absolutely fantastic. I had one young man in that class that was a linguistic from further up north. He was a Caucasian lad, and he had he was working with the Kimberley Aboriginals, and he could speak, because there's many, many dialects. Within a small community, you could have a radius of, say, 1,500 kilometres. You could have seven or eight different dialects.
Wow.
And this young bloke was
and,
a linguistic.
And you're speaking about the Aboriginal languages.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was great. This young fella came down. He'd been touched by some of the... he didn't use the word phenomenon, because he really appreciated that this was their natural way of life, their natural osmosis, how they walked on the land, how they interacted
with the Aboriginals.
The Aboriginals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what he wanted was to be able to... He was doing Reiki in the fact that what he wanted to do was to be have that little bit more of a connection
wow.
to Earth, and he
Great.
Felt that Reiki may be able to do that.
Uh-huh.
So off he toddled, and he went back to Derby and stayed there for... 5 or 6 years more, and was just an incredible young man. And I was impressed with his, again, not complicating it.
Uh-huh.
Not complicating Reiki. And when he first was initiated, on his first initiation, I said to him, that's it, mate, you've got it, away you go, use it, put your hands on yourself and all the rest of it. He'd stayed awake all night giving himself Reiki and looked like absolute death the next morning. And I said to him, what's happened? I said, you look very tired. And he says, I figured the more Reiki I gave myself before you popped on the seal, I'd be full. And his wonderful, wonderful little stories like that. But yeah, we all had a wonderful class. And on the Sunday, I worked out that they were not going to be on time. So I went for a walk along the beach, and it was, for me, surrendering my analness about having to be on time.
Uh-huh.
And again, a beautiful lesson, because I ended up in a place where I wouldn't have thought that I would go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, often as a master, you really have to be flexible and be in the space of the people that you're teaching. Mm. I find this to be true. And sometimes it's very challenging. So you get confronted with your own, you know, how it should be.
Mm.
I don't know where these ideas come from, but That's great. It sounded like that was a really big one about how it should be and how it is. Yeah, great.
It is.
So when you were up there, did you have contact with the Aboriginal people yourself?
Not so much in Broome, but I went and went up further another 260 k's to a place called Cape Levique, which is our most northern tip, in that area. And it was almost like after I'd taken Reiki, dogs were attracted to me. Old people would come and lean on me. And it was sort of like a bit of a magnet, you know. And when I went up to Cape Levique, it was with a lovely Reiki student of mine, Bev, and we went up there and we stayed in a little fronged hut, a shower in the corner, no windows. The floor was sand, so we had fly wire or fly screen type stuff over the swags, and we'd wake up in the morning, there'd be 10 million footprints in the sand floor of the hut, which was all the crazy crabs that had come in and walked all over the floor. That's why we had the netting up. It was wild. But when we were there, we had a group of two Aboriginal men turned up the afternoon that we were staying there. We were there for 5 or 7 days. It was very, very primal, very, it was just no electricity. It was absolutely fantastic. And these two Aboriginal guys turned up in their clanky old ute and they said, "Hey, missus, you see what's out there?" And I'm looking at the ocean. I said, "No, mate, what is it?" And there was a big, huge whale with a calf flicking it up on its tail, playing with it.
Wow.
And I'd been looking, but I didn't see. And these two fellas were just marvellous. And there was a community there called One Arm Point. And One Arm Point is a Aboriginal community. It's a dry community, and they teach the young fellas and young women their natural ritual and tradition. And they said to me, I was in awe of what they'd showed us. I'm sidetracking a bit, but bear with me, there is a point. They said to Bev and I, "Come on down to One Arm Point and we'll take you out to one of the islands and show you what we used to do, etc., etc." So
right in the middle of her most exciting story, we have to take a station break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be right back.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you tired of carrying a heavy wooden massage table around? Is your back sore? Or do you have imprints of cables and braces on your kneecaps after sitting and giving a Reiki treatment? Try a lightweight Astrolite massage table for maximum comfort. Contact us, Paul or Upasana, at www.portablemassagetables.com. Astrolite, the table of a lifetime.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearnings.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Maggie Hall from Bunbury, Western Australia, and she's a great storyteller, as you probably already know by now. And she's in the midst of the story about going to One Arm Point. Is that right?
That's correct.
With a couple of Aboriginals men. So, that's Maggie, correct. Take it away.
So we met them in the afternoon. They invited us down the next day to One Arm Point, which was, you know, probably a drop down of about 30 k's. We set off in our little Suzuki four-wheel drive. It was just like a kerosene tin on wheels. It was shocking. And we made our way through the bush and eventually found the settlement. And as we pulled up on the beach, we were looking for these guys, but they didn't give us an address. We just turned up. And as we look out, there was a about a 15-foot metal dinghy coming in with a turtle kill. And of course, these people have the rights to be able to fish their native food and etc. etc. So they were bringing this in. I was about to ask where these fellas were, and they said, "Oh, you know, you have to eat the meat now because you've watched the kill." And I thought, "Oh no." You know, but what was so wonderful about that was that there was a bunch of elders that had taken the young blokes out, and you know, they tracked the turtle, and the whole community, not one piece of that beautiful animal that gave its life to feed the community, was wasted. And it was all done very, very, very sacredly and with respect. I was in awe, and the little babies were beautiful, little black pickaninnies climbing all over the place, and beautiful children. So they said, "If you've watched the kill, you must take some meat away." So I think we were given around about maybe 1.5-2 kilos of turtle meat. I had turtle meat curried, fried, stewed, you name it, over 4 days, because we didn't have any refrigeration. We just had an esky with ice blocks in to keep the bacon and the butter and the beer cold. You got your priorities. We had this turtle meat, and Bev made some marvellous dishes with this when we went back, and I was pretty honoured, but I was over turtle meat by the time we'd come to the end. But we did eventually meet these two fellas, and they hopped in our little four-wheel drive, and we filled up the dinghy with petrol, and as we're walking out towards the dinghy, there's mangroves. I'm not sure where you get them in the world, but we have them here. They're like a tidal tree. When the ocean comes in, they're
in Florida, I think, the United States.
So same thing, pretty weird. And the couple of Aboriginal guys are looking around, their eyeballs are shooting around in their head, and I'm looking at Bev. And Bev said, "Are there any crocodiles?" And they said, no, we'll tell you if we see any." I tell you, I just about walked on water to the dinghy, because the last thing I wanted to meet was a crocodile out there.
Right.
And so they put us in this little tiny dinghy. It would have made 10, maybe 12 feet. And we headed off into the ocean. No life jackets. No, nothing. We packed a picnic lunch of sandwiches.
No oars in case.
No, absolutely not. And the young fella was on the tiller of the motor, and the old bloke was at the front. And as he stood there, he didn't even turn around and look at the young bloke. He just directed him with the most minimal finger sign of which way to go. Because the tide is changing, there is whirlpools all over the place, and you can get sucked down in them, no problems at all. And all he's doing is standing on the front of the boat. We're sitting in the middle. It was pretty bloody rough too, you know, bounce, bounce, bounce. And this young fella at the back of the motor, and all he did, he just kept his eye on this old man's finger. And if he just, to the right he'd move, to the left, more to the left. and I was watching him dodge all these whirlpools. It was awesome, absolutely awesome. No verbal communication. So they took us out to a little place, a little island that had had a mission settlement on there, which had, you know, died its natural death and was no longer used. So we had a look at that. And then they took us out to another island that was, I mean, we're going out 5-6 kilometres into the ocean.
Oh, great. Things getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
I didn't even think where land was. and that again, they were so generous in showing us this other little island where they'd set up a small infrastructure of buildings where they would take the young blokes out and teach them their custom and try and instill them the pride in their culture. And so we got shown around that, and that was really nice. Had a bit of a chat and a cuppa, and then jumped in the dinghy and off we came back home again. And I think for me, again, it's essentially Reiki leads you, whether you realise that you're actually being led or whether you actually open up enough to trust that there is it's a natural guidance, and to trust your intuition. I mean, a lot of people would be filled with fear and think, I'm not hopping in that little tin dinghy. I didn't even think about it. Because somewhere, somehow now, I know there are no mistakes, and we're in the right place at the right time. And if we allow people to share their gifts, their story, their wisdom, we are far richer. See, I've slowed down a little bit.
Great, yes, really.
Yeah.
Well, what's fantastic, I think, about, or the connection that I make in your stories about these, about the Aboriginals, is just how they are universal life energy, how they are Reiki. This is, it's like if we need inspiration to go back to our true nature as human beings, this is where we this is our inspiration to go back to. And I don't know if it's going back, because that's kind of an interesting turn of phrase. Maybe it's to go forward into another way of being, to be able to have one foot in one world and one foot in the other world, and be able to integrate all of that for ourselves. And I think this place about being led or being guided by Reiki is really important. And I love the image of this old man with his little finger. And, you know, sometimes Reiki does that. If we're listening, you know, for a bong on the head and we only get a little shove or a little bit of an indication, sometimes we don't heed that because it's not strong enough. But then we often find ourselves in a whirlpool. Yeah.
Being guided around it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wonderful. Well, thanks, Maggie, for sharing your stories. It's been beautiful.
Yeah, well, the journey still goes on, and every day is a blessing, and I would like to think that somewhere along the line I'm learning to be more grateful for what I do have and not for what I don't have. And that takes us back to, you know, earn your living honestly.
Exactly.
Do not anger. You know, they're there. It's all integrated with Reiki, and that's a code of ethics.
Yes.
And it's a good one to live by.
Great.
And I do my best, but I do fall occasionally and am reminded.
Yes, well, being human is another great another great path of compassion.
Yep.
Yeah, great. Well, it's tough to say goodbye to Maggie's stories, but we're going to need to. We'll be back next week with some more stories from Masters. This is
Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.